Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gorgeous George and Coz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Monday. It's Monday, August 28th. We're going to discuss the latest in mixed martial arts, which includes, obviously, the results from Singapore. UFC Singapore card headlined by Max Holloway and the Korean Zombie. And I don't know that we spent too much time the other day, but obviously the PFL now has their location, their date for the finals. And, of course, there's all kinds of news always in this great sport of ours and the other combat sports attached to mixed martial arts. We'll go over all of that, and we'll be right back. Yeah, Ghost, so let's get to it, man. I know last week we had the interview with Brad Tavares, and so we spent a lot of time with him. But here's the final card for PFL, and then we'll get going on UFC. Impa Kasanganai versus Josh Silvera, Jesus Pinedo versus Gabriel Alves Braga, Magomed Karamov versus Sadibou C, Clay Collar versus Olivier Abin Mercier, Hannon Fajita versus Dennis Goltsoff, Larissa Pacheco versus Marina Muknatkina. Oh, that's a tough one. Muknatkina. Yeah. So overall, are you circling that date? That's Black Friday, actually, the day after Thanksgiving. So you'll be off. You'll be full of turkey from leftovers and whatever. Is this the kind of card that will make you tune in? And I guess what I'm trying to say is bravo PFL for another one. Let's you got our attention throughout the year. We'll finish off with you just like we normally do, or what, you know, because there's a lot of big names that didn't make it to the end.
Yeah, no, I'm still down with it. I think I remember last year right around this time just kind of enjoying that, being able to just sit back and watch and have that MMA card there. I'm totally down with it. PFL is going to have its ups and downs. It's just like, you know, anytime there's if you watch Champions League soccer or March Madness, like, it just doesn't work. It doesn't play out the way everybody thinks. If it did, it would be boring, right? So I think overall we're going to have a good time with it.
If we hadn't tuned in last year, we wouldn't have seen the great upset by Larissa Pacheco over Kayla Harrison. And that almost was kind of, I was going to say, worth the price of admission, but you know what I mean. That was a great, great fight. And this was a pay-per-view, so there was some admission to it. But what can I tell you? Last year, I remember they mixed in Aspen Ladd versus Julia Budd, which was kind of like a preview towards those ladies being in this year's regular season. I have to reorganize my terms here when it comes to these guys. I believe Stevens was on the card, even though he wasn't a finalist. He fought Natan Schultz. So I think they'll dress it up nicely around these six title fights. I haven't heard anything about pay-per-view. Have you?
No, not yet.
I don't know if I heard that yet necessarily, but whatever. I'll tune in. I like that they're doing something, and they invest money, so I'm willing to invest some money in them. I wouldn't want every card to be a pay-per-view, but once a year, I'll do it. Because, like I say, they try shit, man. They throw stuff at the wall. Some stuff lands, some stuff doesn't, some stuff has yet to play out. Like, Clarissa Shields has been a project, but we still haven't really seen much other than 1-1. In Ghana, we won't see till 2024. Jake Paul, probably in 2024, I guess. Who knows? But they try stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's the important part, is just to kind of keep things going and keep things fresh, because there's a lot of MMA to consume. And if you're not going to stick out in any way, then it's rough, especially when you think about this time period, right? This is where football starts to kick up. That's college and pro. And then basketball starts to come around, and baseball playoffs. You really, really have to stick out if you want to get a sports fan's attention right now.
For sure. All right, well, we'll have plenty of time to make predictions and things like that as we get closer. But let's circle back to the UFC fight card out in Singapore, also known as UFC Fight Night 225, or UFC on ESPN Plus 83, or UFC Fight Night Holloway versus Korean Zombie. So here are the results, and then we'll go to the top and talk about that. Oh, this is going to be a tough one. Here we go. Choi Sung-woo defeated Jarno Ahrens. J.J. Aldrich defeated Liang Na. Billy Goff defeated Yasuku Kinoshita. Song Kanan defeated Rolando Bedoya. Michael Olechek defeated Chidi Njokuani. Garrett Armfield defeated Tashiyomi Kazama. Waldo Cortez Acosta defeated Lucas Reski. Junior Tafa defeated Parker Porter. Aaron Blanchfield defeated Tyler Santos. Rinaya Nakamura defeated Fernie Garcia. Giga Chikadze defeated Alex Caceres. Anthony Smith defeated Ryan Spann. And Max Holloway defeated Chan Sung Jung. The fight of the night went to Max Holloway and Chan Sung Jung. The performance of the night went to Junior Tafa and Michael Olechnik. So Tafa disposed of Parker Porter via KO punch in round one. And Olechnik defeated Chidi Njokuani in round one via TKO punches. Now, were there other fights that ended in TKO punches or subs? There was. J.J. Aldrich, Billy Goff, Garrett Armfield, Waldo Cortez Acosta. So I don't know. Maybe they'll get taken care of. Maybe they won't. But let me tell you something, goes. That crowd in Singapore brought it. There was 10,263 souls in there for a almost $1.3 million gate. But it was loud, man. It was cool throughout the fights. They had an appreciation for every single thing that was taking place. Even if there was like a takedown, but someone worked their way to get back up as the fighters separated, there would be this big round of applause for both fighters for what they had done, the techniques that they had used. First, the fighter to get the other fighter down, then the other fighter to get back to their feet. And that was really, really cool. And I hadn't seen or experienced that in a while. And it was, I wouldn't say refreshing, because obviously it's happened before. And I'm sure it happens at many fight cards, but this all audience in unison was just so appreciative of everything that was taking place. And I'm talking from fight number one all the way on. Now, fight number one goes, it was Choi Sung-woo versus Jarno Ahrens. And I thought, well, is one of these guys a local, or is one of these guys fought maybe at one championship? Why is the crowd like so into every strike? But no, really, what they were just into MMA.
I thought if you could like assign a number to a crowd, you give them a 10, right? There's times where they go to the UK and some of those crowds just really, really bring it. This was one of those types of feeling. I thought it was overall, it helps. It helps with the broadcast. It helps with the fights. I think it actually gives the fighters. Remember, a lot of these fighters aren't really that happy to be traveling and going far. You know, even some of these big cards like Australia, there's a lot of times where fighters aren't in a good mood that they have to do that. And on top of everything, they have to pay double tax, right? There's so many things. But I think when a crowd is that into it, it just kind of reminds you how amazing it is what you do for a living. It's like a concert, right? Like a concert's going to be flat. If the crowd's not into it, the band's not going to be into it. If the crowd's not into it, then the fighters aren't going to be like, I think this one was an amazing one. I got to tip my hat to those guys.
Me too. And when you get up at 2 a.m. or stay awake, which is what I did, but then I was in and out. But the crowd really helped me kind of stay awake and power through. And then at the very end, for them to serenade the Korean Zombie as they played the Cranberry song, Zombie, he had announced his retirement, and they played it, and he walked out slowly. He was making sure he hugged everyone that meant a lot to him, or some fans and the UFC. And dude, that was one of the best retirements ever, man. I'm not joking. I've seen a lot of them. And sometimes, maybe if it's in a pay-per-view, it's like, hey, thanks for the memories. Okay. Da-na-na. The next song's already playing, and here come the fighters, you know? And in this case, because it was the last one, I guess there really was no rush. UFC on ESPN Plus was in control of everything. And, you know, this was like at, what, 7 or 8 a.m.? So it's not like you can go, hey, man, Alabama and Georgia about to kick off. Hurry this shit up. You know, like, no, there was nothing like that. You know, it's on their own streaming service. And so he got a proper send-off. What sucks is, and first I got to eat a little crow because I thought he was going to get walloped.
Me too.
He didn't. He fought his ass off. He actually threatened Max Holloway, hurt him a little bit. Max Holloway rarely even gets wobbled, but, you know, he was touching his chin, and you could tell Holloway was shaking up a little bit, but that's what he can do, is he can shake those off too. But he was touching his chin, and he was just going for it. If it was based on that, I'd say, man, that guy can still give us a few more fights. To lose to Holloway is no shame. To touch Holloway and to threaten him, that says something. But it could be that he just said, I'm just going to go out in a blaze of glory, which maybe that is the way for some fighters to fight. Sometimes fighters are so cautious, they do nothing but get their asses kicked for 15 or 25 minutes. This guy did in the end, but he put some stuff on Holloway.
Yeah, it was interesting because the result was terrific for Max Holloway, but it did kind of like blow your mind a little bit at some of the successes that the Korean Zombie did have. You could tell he took this fight very, very serious. He was very prepared for it. It just didn't work out. And, you know, a lot of people go up against Max Holloway and have that same problem. There's no shame in that. If you look at that performance, you probably look at a lot of that division and you say, well, that Korean Zombie that showed up probably beat some of these guys. But I don't know that you want to test that out. Like, why do you have to wait until you're KO'd really badly to say, okay, it's time to go? The damage is done at that point, right? I think Korean Zombie, if he's been able to save his money, if he's been able to be happy with the way his career has played out, walk away now. It's a good time, you know, and I can't think of, obviously, if he would have won, it would have been better. But off of a loss, I can't think of things looking any better. The way the crowd sent you off, the buzz that was in the air that night, be proud of what you accomplished.
Would you want to see Zombie at a Masvidal event or a bare knuckle or a Jake Paul event? Like, hey, you don't have to worry about the wrestling or the jiu-jitsu. You don't have to try and put anyone in a twister or anything like that. Just throw hands, baby.
Yes and no. I think it would be interesting, but at the same time, those type of events, you need, like, you're watching it and you're not watching the best boxer in the world, right? This is not high level boxing. The reason you're tuning in is because there's some kind of heat, like something needs to be solved, right? You wouldn't get that out of a Korean Zombie. The only thing that I could think of that could maybe be fun is if he boxed Jose Aldo, you know, something mm-hmm. like that. That might be interesting for me. But other than that, I don't know that that's his world. But I would definitely tune in.
Well, I wonder if some of these fighters grew up wanting to be boxers, we'll say. And then they realize, ooh, I probably don't have that speed and technical prowess to be that, but I can be a mixed martial artist because I may not be high level boxing, but I'm still a good boxer, but I can grapple like a motherfucker, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so now they get to scratch that itch, and if they get handsomely paid, then yeah, sure, why not? Now, you're right, we don't know if this guy's a superstar in Korea. We don't know if all kinds of money's been saved if he's got an incredible job as a sports ambassador, or maybe something lined up with UFC, or who knows, and maybe he just doesn't need to do this. But if he does, boy, I think that guy can sell tickets. I mean, everyone was into the zombie on Saturday.
You know, one thing I do want to see changed a little bit, when you see the reaction from people, the effect that the Korean zombies had, you know, I don't know what it's like in Korea, but like over here in the United States, we have a lot of athletes. There's a lot of sports that get played. I don't know that there's that many sports and that many celebrities and high level athletes like that in Korea. Like, they have to figure out how to do this military service thing. You know, nobody's saying the Korean zombie doesn't have to serve in the military, but maybe don't take away a piece of his career. You know, wait till the end and have him complete it then. Have him do it that way, because honestly, like, you need these types of heroes out there. You need them putting your country on the map. And he definitely did that, but he was robbed of a couple years of his career.
Yeah, and this goes for the K-pop stars too, right? Like, no one gets away from this military service, which in a way, it's like, well, at least they're being fair. I mean, I don't know how you get out of it. Maybe fake bone spurs or something, but it sounds like everyone has to do it. And it probably makes every single one of these boys and girls, it accelerates the process of being men and women, but it seems like everyone has to do this. And yeah, that's true, goes some sort of an exception of, hey, can this guy serve maybe a desk job when he's done at age 40? He'll do his 3 years or whenever. I mean, look, I guess he could have done it right now, right? I mean, he just retired, and I think he's, let's see his age, 37, 36. So he could still do it now, but whatever. Back to the zombie. Incredible career. I personally, if I'm running the UFC Hall of Fame, I think he meets the criteria that's been set, which is not all having to do with just the immortal gods of MMA. I think if you've contributed in some way to the sport and helped it grow, the UFC takes a good look at you being in their Hall of Fame. And I think this guy did not only deserves a good look, he deserves to be in. He kind of helped spearhead that country and also Asia for the ones that followed. Like, if you think about it, guess who else had a ton of personality and rarely said anything in English, if anything in English, and that's Sakuraba. I mean, he was beloved, you know, and I think the Korean zombie is kind of like pretty much at that level. And some fighters can do it and others can't, and, you know, we'll see, but I think he deserves to get in. If there was an MMA Hall of Fame based on just credentials, it might be tough, but he was a two-time title challenger. He only lost to legends. Aldo took him out and Volkanovski took him out. He beat two future Hall of Famers in Frankie Edgar and Dustin Poirier. He had a respectable record overall of 17 and 8. Most of his fights were finishes, 14 of them, 6 by KO, 8 by submission. But, I mean, he really, really pulled in fans, and I think he was a headliner that could sell tickets. So that one would be a tough one in an MMA Hall of Fame that's just dedicated to, like I say, the immortal gods. Maybe not. Who knows? Especially if you start it now and apply criteria now. If you started an MMA Hall of Fame back then, I think a lot of fighters would get in, because at that time we thought we were basically seeing the most elite fighters in the world. And then we had to kind of sift through them and finally eventually get around to them. But I think he makes the UFC Hall of Fame.
I think it'd have to be sooner or later. I think if too much time goes by, he might just get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah. Agreed. On this card, it was pretty decent. This fight night card is my type of fight night card. Oftentimes the UFC will give something at the Apex where they'll go, hey, look at this main event, and then we got some other fighters going on, which almost makes you feel like you're tuning into a Dana White contender series. This one had Anthony Smith and Ryan Spann in the co-main event. And this one went to a split decision. Anthony Smith got the win. Giga Chikadze defeated Alex Caceres via unanimous decision. But both guys are names. Chikadze back after 18 months. Congrats to him, shaking off that ring rust and getting a win over a guy that had won his last two, but he had won 7 of his last 8 in Bruce Leroy. Any thoughts on those two fights?
Well, for one, oh man, I love me some Anthony Smith, but I don't know that he won that fight. That one was a little difficult. With Alex Caceres, I wonder what it's like to be a guy like him. This may sound harsh, and I don't mean it to be that way, but Alex Caceres is a guy that when you see him pop up on your card, you're excited. You know, you're thinking, this is a good name. He's always going to give you a good fight. But you just don't feel like he's going to be a player in the title picture or nothing. I wonder what that's like as a fighter, like what that mentality's like. Giga Chikadze, that was a good performance for him, you know, and that kind of makes things interesting now going forward for him, because it gives him a little bit more life. And I'm sure we'll get to it, that the division is kind of strange, right? We don't really know what all's going to happen. What will it take for Max Holloway to get another shot? I don't think a lot of people are really in favor of that. But I did think about something, George, if it's all right to veer off in that realm. Do you want to or no?
Yeah, I should have. When we talked about the main event, I should have brought that up.
Well, think about this. I don't think it's crazy that Holloway does get another shot. I just think it's crazy that he gets it going through Volkanovski. If Volkanovski fights Topuria and wins, I think there's a good chance you could see him go up to 155. And if he did that, then I think what you could do is maybe you take Giga and you take Yair, make them fight, winner fights Holloway for the new belt. I could see something like that happening.
If Volkanovski beats Topuria?
Well, if he's matched up with him and if he beats him,
yeah.
I could see Volkanovski saying, look, I've already done enough here. I'm ghost. I'm out. I'm going up to 155. Then I could see Max Holloway possibly capturing a title again.
For an interim while Volkanovski's gone, or you're saying Volkanovski just vacates?
He's just gone. Open. Yeah, he's just
gone. Yeah, for sure. Then at that point, Holloway definitely needs to be one of the two participants, because he's been holding down the fort while anytime Volkanovski's not involved. But he's down a clear 3-0. I can make an argument for it only being 2-1, but even that settles the trilogy. Even if we go, all right, you won fight 2, you still got waxed in fight 3. And it's just tough, but it's tough because Holloway keeps taking everyone else out. But that's still not me campaigning on his behalf that he should get a fourth fight. I don't think he should get a fourth fight. I think you give Topuria his fight, and then we'll see how things play out. I think there's going to be a lot of fighters. You brought one up, Chikadze, or like Arnold Allen, who took an L, but dusted themselves off and are working their way back. And I think one of those will be out there. We almost had Sterling moving up just out of, hey, I'm too big for 35. I've done well. I want to test myself, but looks like he wants to stay. In fact, do you want to talk about that for a sec? Because
sure.
I don't know that, you know, I know that we talked as much as we could based on the information that we knew, but last week when Sterling lost, he said, wow, I may have to reconsider 45 because if O'Malley can do this to me, I wonder what Volk would do to me. And we all said, we appreciate his honesty. That's great. But now in a way, it's almost like he's hurting his own cause if he ever gets there. You know what I mean? Like by showing us the human side. Anyway, since then, Mirab Davalishvili, and boy, has this guy taken some heat online. He has said he will stand aside. He's not ready to compete yet. Fully. He's not ready to fully train and all that yet, but he's getting close. I think he thinks that towards the end of the year, early next year, he could, if he had the title shot, he would. He said he would even fight through the injury. But he's willing to step aside and let Sterling try and recapture his belt. And I think what he thinks is if Sterling and O'Malley were to fight and Sterling wins, Sterling leaves anyway. But think about this. If Sterling wins, what are they? 1-1. They still have a big money trilogy fight on the table. And with O'Malley becoming the big star that he has, this could be A, big for Sterling because he'd be champ with pay-per-view points, and B, big for the UFC because O'Malley's a star, right? Especially if these are great fights. So now what does that do? That backs things up even more. All the while, you still got Corey Sandhagen, Marlon Vera. I don't know that Davalos really is playing his hand right on this one.
It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, does he have information? Like, did Marab kill somebody and he's got the tape or what? Like, this dude, he's like the best friend that everybody wants. I can't believe how loyal he is. But honestly, like, your career is going to pass you by if you can't make these moves. And I think Aljamain Sterling needs to maybe repay the favor now, right? Like, Marab waited long enough. Granted, he's not ready to go right now, but it doesn't seem like he's that far away.
It's just easy to say when you're champ and you're winning, oh yeah, and the next one I'll move up, and then it's Marab's time. But then when you get knocked out, holy cow, your life changes.
Things
you
don't get the
review points, you're not the champ, doors aren't opening, your stakes aren't being paid for by fans. You know, like, I bet you he's going through a lot right now, like some sort of withdrawal, Sterling. It's been about a week, but I bet you he's just like, man, am I still the same guy? Because this thing can glorify you, especially when you're on top for a while. Other champions respect you. People are calling you a possible GOAT. You're in the conversation with Cruz. And now it's all about O'Malley.
Well, it's interesting, too, because when you think about, like, just stylistically, I feel like Marab would be a nightmare for Sean O'Malley. You know what I mean? So, like, it's there. It's within his grasp. But he's letting it slip away. And, you know, I don't know what to attribute that to.
Yeah. O'Malley really wants Cheeto. But I think a lot of that has to do with, I'm not saying he's not ready for the wrestlers yet, because he did stop O'Malley, Sterling. But I also don't feel like he got the full arsenal of Sterling's takedown attempts. I think it was only one, honestly. Mm-hmm. And he fought it off, and that's good. He also was a moving target, and that made it so that so that Sterling, it wasn't easy for him to position himself to do it. Part of it was Sterling wanted to put on a show, but part of it was, too, O'Malley had good lateral movement. But either way, I think against a guy like Marab, you're going to be fighting off takedown after takedown after takedown. And then against a guy like Cejudo, who likes to throw hands, I think Cejudo's probably thinking, man, I lost against Sterling. I don't want to lose against this guy. I got to get him on the ground and ground and pound him. And, you know, because he'll be at a real deficit with the reach and things like that. But I don't think it's bad on O'Malley's part to do that, because look, in the one hand, he gets to avenge a loss, although he'll tell you, I never lost. But why do you got it out for Cheeto then, if you never lost to him? I think at some point someone's got to put a mic in his face and go, hey, why do you really want this one? You beat him, remember? Like, you know, and like, yeah. See what he says to that. But get a fresh matchup. You beat this guy, you're undefeated, and then you roll your eyes. What about Cejudo? He lives in the same state as you. He likes to talk trash. He's a big fight. I don't know. I think he knows in this one, we get the kickbox. May the best man win. And frankly, look, Vera probably is up there in terms of sales. I think Cejudo's still probably bigger than Davalishvili, Sandhagen. But I'm hearing Vera's pretty popular. I don't know if he's as popular as Cejudo. If he were to beat Vera, I think that could also set something up down the road with those two. If Vera were to shake that off and get some wins and have a great trilogy fight, but who knows? I guess I just wanted to focus more on Davalishvili and just what a team player that guy is, man.
Dude, the ultimate team player.
I think it was Chael Sonnen that pointed out, Marab, in this case, your loyalty is not being tested. It's your shot. You're not stealing the shot from Sterling if they tell you it's your shot. Now, if they give Sterling the rematch and they offer it, then I guess Merab didn't have to step aside because they never came to him to begin with. But if they come to you, then it's not really stealing the guy's shot because they came to you. That's a tough one, man. That really, really is a tough one. But anyway, all right. So let's circle back to this card, and then we'll put a bow on it. Aaron Blanchfield defeated Tyler Santos. Excuse me. That was the other big fight on the card. No disrespect to the others. Congrats on their wins. But this one has kind of title implications. Why? Because Tyler Santos went toe-to-toe with Valentina Shevchenko, gave her one of the greatest scares to the reign that she had prior to it ending versus Alexa Grasso earlier this year. That fight was last year. Tyler Santos had, I believe, an orbital eye injury that maybe was going to require surgery, but then it didn't. But for some reason, that fight never came to fruition, the rematch. They went with Grasso. Many felt like Shevchenko was maybe even running from Santos because Santos really, really wanted it, stated she was ready, and it was an exciting fight. Why not run it back? But they didn't. So now she loses to Grasso, but because she was the incredible champion that she was, the UFC said, you get an automatic rematch. So Santos, I think, wanted to stay busy, and her, along with Aaron Blanchfield and probably Manon Fioron, are top of the class. So they matched up these two. And by the way, Fioron fights this Saturday against Rose Namajunas, who's moving up to flyweight. But Blanchfield took her out. So Blanchfield now is getting all the flowers from everybody, and they're telling her, you're probably next for the winner. And I think that's right. She's 6-0 in the UFC, and she's done very, very well for herself. Overall, she holds a 12-1 record. Overall, I think her only loss is to Tracy Cortez back in the Invicta days. Anyway, your thoughts on this fight? Like I say, it's important to women's flyweight.
It was a good fight, but my opinion of Blanchfield before the fight and after kind of changed a little bit. And I can't tell if it's Santos exposing something or if it's just Santos being that good. But my opinion has definitely, I felt like Blanchfield was just kind of on her way to being that person that's going to be at the top. Now I think it's going to either take a little bit more time or she might not be ready just yet. I don't know. That's hard to kind of figure out because of the performance that Santos had.
Well, hold on. I'm confused a little. Usually Blanchfield takes people down and she's just a blanket. She smothers you and beats you up or submits you. In this case, she went to a decision. But in round three, I thought what won the fight for Blanchfield was her toughness and her hands. And I thought that's improvement, you know, like to show, hey, I can throw strikes as well. I don't think she would want to do that in round one. But in round three, when you're tired and you're gutting it out, but you're the one that had the better stand-up towards the end, maybe when even winning that round. I think that's a testament to Aaron Blanchfield.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not disagreeing with that. It's just she had this feeling early on like we just might have this diamond in the rough. And maybe she just showed that she's a little human in this fight.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll tell you this much. If Grasso can submit Shevchenko, I believe Blanchfield could as well. But I think Shevchenko did like a Chris Weidman with that kick, you know, where he didn't need that kick, but he did it, and Rockhold took advantage of it. Now, I'm not saying Rockhold couldn't have beat him anyway, but I'm just saying specifically in the Grasso-Shevchenko fight, I thought Shevchenko was on her way to a 3-1 lead going into the fifth, and she threw this spinning back kick, but kind of just the timing of it was off. Alexa did a great job of getting out of it, but then immediately closed and took her down and attacked. I thought that was brilliant. And she said she trained for that. And I believe her. She's been in the studio once, but she doesn't strike me as a liar. And that's great. But I don't know. Blanchfield can initiate her own takedowns. Who knows? And maybe Valentina thought, oh, I've been here before. I'm comfortable. And next thing you know, she underestimated her rear naked choke attack and, you know, submit. Maybe it all happened too quick. I don't know. I don't know how to explain that, but I had never thought in a lifetime that she would lose to Alexa Grasso. I thought Alexa Grasso had nice hands, not the most powerful hands, but they're clean. And I guess if they connect, but Valentina's been in there with fucking Amanda Nunes, man. And Amanda Nunes hasn't been able to knock her out, you know, so, and Holly Holm. So why is Alexa Grasso going to do it? But if she is, that's the way. And next thing you know, it's via submission. I don't know. That's tricky to me. She's also 35. Who knows? She may have been caught overlooking her. We really, really, really don't know. But I expect her to come back the way GSP came back and mopped up Sarah. I think she might do that. Now, she, again, the age thing scares me a little bit. And you get 30% better as a fighter just because you wear the belt, according to Teddy Atlas. So maybe I'm wrong.
Did she come back completely, too, from the knee injury?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. It was a few years ago, but she never used that as an excuse. The good thing is all these fights are coming up. So the Fioron Namajunas is this week. Then we have the fight card in Australia. And then the one after that is Noche UFC, which is Grasso versus Shevchenko. So pretty cool stuff there. All right. I guess that kind of, you know, puts an end there to that fight card. Again, Singapore, you guys brought it. Chan Sung Jung, man, if your brain isn't fried from combat sports, I thought you still showed you can do it, man. Go out there and keep performing. But who knows? Maybe I think what he knows is he's probably going to get an up-and-comer in the UFC and not necessarily those top that top billing versus other killers. I mean, it wasn't that long ago he beat Dan Ige, and Ige's still out there doing his thing. But this guy's a little older than Ige, I get it.
Seconds from beating Yair Rodriguez, too.
That's true, yeah. The upward inverted elbow. That was amazing. Mm-hmm. This weekend, we have Gon versus Spivak out in Paris, France. We just wrapped up spinning backclick with Farah Hanoun. She'll be covering the event for us in Paris, France. Danny Segura was also on the show. That show is every Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, at least for the next 7 weeks, and then we'll go back to our normal time 1 hour later, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Check that out. You can go to youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. Subscribe to the channel. Check out that video. It's already out, the replay from today. We discussed a lot of the big topics kind of in more detail with the panel. Hit the like and subscribe on that. That would really, really help us out a lot. But this fight card, like I say, is I wanted to compare it to Singapore. It's got Gon and Spivak, quality main event. Fiorot versus Namajunas, quality co-main event. And then it's got Thiago Moises, Benoit Saint-Denis, who fought really, really well and exciting the last time he was out. Volkan Ozdemir's on the card. So I like that. I like that we're going two or three deep on some of these fight nights. I don't know if it has to be international for that to happen, but I'm telling you, some at the apex, you're like, holy cow, like, what are we doing here?
What does this fight mean, right?
I mean, Namajunas is a star, and she's the co-main event.
Yeah.
The following week, they're in Australia, Adesanya versus Strickland. Tuivasa versus Volkov, Kopp versus Felipe Dos Santos, who was going to be on Dana White Contender Series this past Tuesday. If you recall, they only had four fights instead of five. But that fifth fight, the guy that did make weight, that's Felipe Dos Santos. He's been rewarded with Manel Kopp. Justin Taffa, the other brother of Junior Taffa, who beat Parker Porter, he fights on this card against Austin Lane. Tyson Pedro's back. Carlos Ulberg, he's going to be fighting Jamie Malarkey versus John McDessie. Boy, John McDessie's still chugging along, goes.
Yeah, dude.
He's 38. He fought at UFC 124 against Pat Audenwood in December of 2010. And this fight card
that's
is
a random. How do you remember that?
293. Well, I mean, think about how many times he's been on the show.
True.
You know what? Is that the same guy? Hold on a second. I got to check something. The Peruvian fighting at PFL?
Mm-hmm.
He fought in the UFC?
The Monster? I don't think so.
Jesus Pinedo, who's fighting, he beat Bubba Jenkins and Brendan Loughnane. He actually fought in the UFC one time against John, twice. Lost against John McDessie and beat Devin Powell. He only went 1-1. It was a quick stop. And, man, he's really, really fighting really nice right now. Mm-hmm. But he did fight. This was back in 2018 and 19. So this one must have got lost in the shuffle. But McDessie beat him. Jesus Pinedo. Pinedo's gotten a lot better since then. I mean, to beat Loughnane and Jenkins back-to-back the way he did, man, finishing both. I got to believe he'll take down Gabriel Alves Braga. But, yeah. Anyway. That's the 293 card that's coming up. In the latest news, Conor McGregor, we'll start with him. Let's get it out of the way. I didn't include him in spinning backlick because he just somehow weasels his way into spinning backlick every week with a tweet or something. I didn't want to do it this way this time, but I'll bring him up here on Junkie Radio. It's two different shows. He said he is fighting at the end of the year at UFC 296 in mid-December. And some people are pointing to Fight Pass may have slipped and actually also put something out with his name on it and Chandler's name on it. And I don't know if that's true or not. Again, this would basically mean, goes, that he circumvents the 6 month, the policy of being in the USADA pool for 6 months when you return as a fighter. A lot of people have asked, hey, how is it that some people can be like Felipe Dos Santos, for example? He hasn't even been in the UFC yet. How can he get Manel Cop? I believe that's when you first come in so that you can take a short notice fight. That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. But, and you're still, once you're in, obviously you're not going to just say, okay, I'm in, even though I've been taking steroids last month. You're obviously going to have to be a clean fighter. But when you've left, and then want to come back, you have to do 6 months so that you can't just retire, inject yourself, get bigger and more swole or whatever and recover and then say, hey, I am retired and then play that game. I guess that's why they have that rule. So let's say McGregor, as of yesterday, the 27th, said, yeah, you know what, I'm in. He can't fight till February 27th.
Right.
Under the 6 months. But we know that the UFC has given exemptions before. They did one with Brock Lesnar. They're in litigation over that, or were litigation over that, because Mark Hunt, I think, had a problem with that. That's why I felt like they're gonna, no matter what's gonna happen, he's always gonna have to do the 6 months. But he did put that out yesterday. I don't know how serious to take it because I'm up to here with it. I just keep saying, piss in a cup, and we know that now you're serious and you'll be fighting anytime in the next 6 months. Like, if he really wanted to fight in December, why wouldn't he have peed on June 27th or June 1 or whatever it means to get into that 6 month?
Right. It's a slippery slope. I mean, UFC is very capable of doing something like that, but I don't know. USADA just seemed really, really against it. There's so many people that are against it as well that, like, I just don't see it happening.
Fair enough. Kevin Holland said this, goes, when they asked him about him versus Ian Machado Gary. He doubts it'll happen. He quote, he says, they have a blueprint for guys like that. Would you agree with that?
Maybe, yeah.
Because Kevin isn't a wrestler. Usually the blueprint is, this guy's an exciting striker. We need him to keep winning. Do not put him in there against a wrestler.
Yeah.
And Kevin doesn't strike me as that. And Kevin seems to be well-liked. I mean, he's one of the UFC president's favorites. So I don't know if this is accurate or not. What he does have is a solid ground game,
mm-hmm.
does Kevin Holland. I mean, he just submitted Michael Chiesa, for crying out loud. But maybe he's right. I don't know. Amanda Hevas is booked against Luana Pinedo on November 18th. Now, I know to some of you that might not be a big deal, but man, I'm a big Hevas fan. I thought her and Macy Barber had an awesome fight last time out. We also had a really cool interview with her. And since then, she always seems so happy. And I can't hate on a person that just enjoys every day of life. That seems to be her.
She's like the opposite in the cage, right? She's a beast in the cage. Outside of the cage, she's super sweet and happy all the time. But that fight was something else. I really hope we get to see them fight another time.
Correcto mundo goes. All right, Jermaine Durandamy is targeting a fourth quarter 2023 return after giving birth. So this young lady, well, she's not a spring chicken, but she's obviously not a golden girl either. So we'll just say this lady is actually pretty amazing, goes. A lot of people don't know this. So she's a cop out in Holland.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't fight very often, but when she has, she's made it count. And she's 39. She just had a kid. But look at the skins on her wall. She's beaten Julie Ketsy, Larissa Pacheco, Holly Holm, Raquel Pennington, Aspen Ladd, and Juliana Pena.
Pretty
Pena, big. Holm, and Pacheco have all held major titles. She's only lost to Amanda Nunes twice. And basically, since 2011, that's been her. The only fighter she's lost to is Amanda Nunes. Now, she did have a couple of losses early on, but even those fighters weren't tomato cans. Vanessa Porto and Julia Budd. But again, she just takes these long spells in between fights. However, she's literally been the epitome of pound for pound, because she's fought at bantamweight, where she was a title contender, and featherweight, where she won a UFC title. She's mm-hmm. been really complicated for me to rank, because again, when you're away for 2 years, we got to drop you. Getting pregnant, I gave her a lifeline, but then eventually it just, you know, it's not fair to the other young ladies. I finally had to pull her even after the birth of the kid, but now she's back.
But she's fun to watch.
Yeah. And you know, I know that, let's see here. Holm just lost, although that might get overturned because Mayra Bueno Silva just got caught for a substance. And we have Juliana Pena. She's barking to fight. Raquel Pennington, them two should probably fight for the vacant title. But Jermaine holds a win over both. I mean, I think if she comes back in quarter four, she probably won't be necessarily straight into a title fight, but you're carrying some weight when you have a win over those two, especially if those two fight for the title.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's so funny though. Like, she got criticism back in the day because she didn't want to face Cyborg, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that kind of like hit. Some people tipped their cap and said that a girl, and then some people were like, nah, you just can't do that. I'm curious what her career would have looked like had she just been more of an active fighter. I don't know that she would have reached the highest of highs, but I think the skins on her wall would have been enough to really be somebody that we talk about.
Yeah. And she had the same stance that Kat Zingano's had, where she wants additional testing. At the time, they didn't have USADA yet. And so she was like, whoa, 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 whoa. You know what I mean? Like, I'll fight her, but I think she wanted additional testing, and she just wasn't against the couple of knocks that Cyborg had taken due to PEDs. And I can respect that, you know. Had others taken fights, sure, but she said, no, I'm not going to do it. You have any thoughts on Sean O'Malley's face tattoo? Did you see it?
Yeah, champ. And it says something else too, right?
I don't know which ones he's already had, but it says champ, and then it's got in Roman numerals. I think that's the new one. I think there's a crown there.
I'm not a big fan of tattoos, but I guess that's one that you can never take away from him, right? If I'm a Linkin Park fan and I throw that up on my face, there's a good chance in a couple of years I go, maybe they weren't that good or whatever. You're never going to not be the champion. Like, it's something you accomplished. It's there to stay. It's kind of like when people do their dogs or their kids or something. So if that's his thing, which obviously I guess it is, he's got so many of them, but on the face, Jesus Christ, that probably hurt really bad.
True. I think once Tyson did it, it just probably changed the way, you know, you're right. Tattoos were mostly an arm thing back in the day. Mm-hmm. And then it seemed like everyone was getting wings on their back and the barbed wire or whatever it's called, whatever looked at
anchor.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The anchors for the Navy seamen, but now they're everywhere. And that's just the deal. But the face, yeah, I think a lot of that changed with probably Mike Tyson. Mm-hmm. But anyway, all right, folks, we're going to cut short here a little bit. We usually give it that hour, but a lot of times we go overboard and we want to maybe even things out a little bit. But I think we did a good job covering the UFC Singapore event. By the way, Chikadze's saying he wants Yair Rodriguez next because he finally wants to fight on a pay-per-view. I was like, what? Never fought on a pay-per-view before? But he should. He's exciting. Of course, there's a Dana White Contender Series event tomorrow. There's no more PFL until the playoffs. And then we have a UFC event in Paris, France. There's still a full calendar, which you can check out on the schedule tab. So you'll see what's next, not only just for the UFC, but also Bellator. And I believe one championship is in there as well. So I always encourage you to make most of the usage that you can out of the website because a lot of hard work goes into the website. But I'm telling you, if you're a fan of the sport, the website, the free app on all smartphones and tablets is available for you to keep up. And then our socials are incredible. We have an Instagram page with over 1.1 or 1.2 million followers. We're constantly posting stuff there. We have this YouTube channel with over 13,000 subscribers. Lots of content there. And then, of course, Facebook and Twitter. So check it out. All right, folks. And also, World MMA Awards are coming up. We would love to get your vote for best media source. It only takes about 5 minutes to 10 minutes to fill out. You go to worldmmaawards.com. MMA Junkie is up for best media source. We've won the award 5 times, but it's been a while since we won it. We want to win it again. So please take the time to go out and vote, especially if you think we really are the best. But if not, then just take the time to vote for whoever you want. We'll respect that. There's a lot of other categories like male fight of the year, female fight of the year, coach of the year, things like that. Eric Nixick is up for coach of the year. He's a good friend of the show. And also our colleague, Nolan King, he's up for Journalist of the Year. So perhaps you can give him some love. He's an amazing, talented young fella, and I would put him right up there with any of the others. Hell, not just in the sport, but even in our talented staff, where many have been nominated in the past mm-hmm. or present. Folks, we're out of here. Enjoy your day. Go out and be a champion. We'll talk to you soon.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.